Hello and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. From the front page, Dateline Waterloo by Amy Rivers. You can find Jody Bisgrove swimming laps at Burns Park Pool most days in the summer. Water brings me peace, Bisgrove said. So, when the city of Waterloo asked residents what they want to do with their two aging outdoor pools, Bisgrove made sure to register her opinion on keeping outdoor lap swimming, as well as plenty of deck chairs and shade. I understand kids are going to play and kids are going to screw around. They're entitled to do that. I did that. I'm not going to knock that, Bisgrove said. But you gotta keep in mind you have adults that are using this stuff. Those opinions are what Darren Barr, a principal at Ballard King Consulting Firm, was hoping to get at Thursday evening's open house on Waterloo's Aquatic Master Plan. Residents were invited to tell the firm, which is studying the issue for the city, what elements they want in both an outdoor facility or facilities, as well as a potential indoor competitive or instructional pool. What do you like to do with the pool? What programs would you like to see at the pool? What's missing from Gates Park or Burns Park? Barr asked the crowd. Ballard King has already completed a market assessment for both indoor and outdoor aquatic facilities, Barr said, to avoid duplicating services already available. Interviewers spoke with staff at both pools as well as focus groups. The firm hasn't considered yet whether the city should have two pools or consolidate into one, or what kinds of facilities should be offered. We don't have a horse in the race in terms of if you build a facility or if you don't build a facility, Barr said. We want to go ahead and make sure we provide you the best information possible so the city can make great decisions as it moves forward. Participants were given 6 round stickers, 3 to signal which outdoor pool amenities they liked the most, and 3 for indoor features. Outdoor options included lap lanes, zero-depth entries, slides, play structures and features, and aquatic center layouts. Indoor options included instructional pools and seating options, as well as 25-yard and 50-meter pools. Participants also could write down what they liked and disliked about each current pool. Latasha Frost hopes if the city's two pools are consolidated, it will be at Gates Park. She said the location near major highways would easily connect to Cedar Falls and Waverly, had more land available to grow into, be more evenly distanced from the falls in Cedar Falls and Lost Island Water Park in South Waterloo that burns and added momentum to the developing North Crossing area. Why would we expect private companies to invest in the Northeast if we aren't leading the way by example when it matters most? Frost said. This would be an intentional statement to investors and developers that we, as a city, believe in the Northeast side of town and we are willing to put our money where our mouth is. Summary recommendations will be ready by late August, Barr said, with a final report planned for early November. The company will include a couple different options, with Water Technology, Inc. providing layouts and a rough order magnitude costs, while Ballard King will estimate operational costs. The city still wants public input. Residents can weigh in at surveymonkey.com/r/aqua-waterloo. The next story is Waterloo Firefighters Go Catfishing by Jeff Reinitz, Dateline Waterloo. Waterloo firefighters plucked a kitten from the Cedar River after it apparently fell from a bridge Monday morning, according to fire officials. A woman spotted the stray female cat on the Mullen Avenue Bridge shortly before 8 a.m. and stopped to remove her from traffic. The kitten bit the Good Samaritan and then ran off, scuttling down a drainage hole and plunging into the water. The cat began swimming, circling and zigzagging as the current pulled her downstream. Crews from Waterloo Fire Rescue launched an inflatable rapid deployment boat and paddled to the cat, intercepting her before she reached the dam. Once back on shore, the cat was turned over to animal control officials. The next headline is Mathis will challenge Hinson in First District. by James Lynch from The Gazette, Dateline Cedar Rapids. Democratic State Senator Liz Matthes is running for the U.S. House in Iowa's 1st District, setting up a race between former co-workers, both well-known across the district from their time as television news anchors. Matthes will challenge first-term Republican Representative Ashley Hinson, who is seeking re-election in what now is the 20-county 1st District. Redistricting, set to take place later this year, will result in new congressional election boundaries, but it's likely Hinson and Matthes, who live less than 10 miles apart, will continue to be in the same district. Matthes, 63, said she will draw on her experience not only as a television reporter and anchor for 27 years at KWWL-TV and KCRG-TV, both of which cover the 1st District market, but from what she has learned as a children's advocate, wife, mother, caregiver, and legislator since 2011. I've spent decades listening and telling stories as a journalist, and I've helped fix problems in our communities as a state senator and nonprofit leader, Matthes said. Lately, I've heard from so many Iowans who are concerned about the partisanship and conflict they're seeing in Washington. It's clear Iowans want leaders who care about fairness and honesty, who want to make sure businesses, farmers, and workers succeed, and who want to see communities thrive so that our kids and grandkids inherit an even better Iowa, she said. I'm running because Iowans deserve better leadership and a member of Congress who listens to their concerns and delivers results. Matthes has been approached numerous times about running for various offices, but the time wasn't right for her and her family, she said. She and her husband Mark, who is a partner in a local business with 40 employees in Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, and Wausau, Wisconsin, have two adult children. In May, she announced her retirement from Four Oaks, a children's welfare agency. I think Iowa is a great place to live. I want that to continue, and to continue that work that I've done for my Senate district. Work was around thriving communities and helping people be more successful, she said. That's why I'm doing it now. Whenever Matthes's name has come up as a candidate for the U.S. House, the U.S. Senator, the U.S. Senate, or governor, Republicans have been quick to describe her as a status quo Democrat. The Hinson campaign has labeled her Liberal Liz, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's hand-picked new protege. Liberal Liz has never met a tax hike she doesn't like, said Hinson campaign manager Sophie Crowell. As a state senator, she voted with other Democrats against the largest tax cut in Iowa history. Liberal Liz supports lockdowns, mask mandates, and keeping our kids out of school. She even supports vaccine passports, Crowell said. Matthes believes her track record shows she can work across the aisle. So I'm not going to let the other party define me. I'm going to define myself. In addition to their time working together at KCRG, where Matthes was an evening news anchor while Hinson was a morning news anchor, the candidates' connection continued at the Iowa legislature, where Hinson served two terms representing a House district that was one half of Matthes' Senate district. If elected, Matthes said her priority will be health care, reducing the cost, especially of prescription drugs, expanding access across rural areas, and increasing mental health services. After years working on the local and state level, Matthes said she is ready to do bigger things, especially to help middle-class Iowans who are being left behind, who are living paycheck to paycheck. I get that from my life's experience, she said. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I had to pay for my own college. I had to pay college loans. We started a business with zero money. So the need for helping people who are in that same situation, the need right now is bigger than ever and greater than ever. Hinson was elected to Congress in 2020, outperforming former President Donald Trump in the 1st District as she defeated incumbent Democratic Representative Abby Finkenauer, now a candidate for the Democratic U.S. Senate nomination, by nearly 11,000 votes, despite a Democratic voter registration advantage of more than 23,000. On page 2, there is a correction. Another candidate seeks Ward 1 seat. On A3 of Monday's Courier, the article McCracken Running for Ward 1 Seat incorrectly stated Mickey McCracken is the only candidate who has announced for that seat. John Chiles also announced his candidacy for the Ward 1 seat in an article in the July 12th Courier. Turning to page 3, this Cedar Valley page, the headline is Midsummer in the Garden. Theater group stages Shakespeare comedy in Arboretum Pergola by Melody Parker. Dateline Waterloo. It's easy to imagine fairies hiding beneath leaves and blooms at the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanic Garden, manipulating love-addled humans in A Midsummer Night's Dream. The Rose Garden will serve as the setting for the Waterloo Community Playhouse Black Hawk Children's Theater production of William Shakespeare's comedy at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. A matinee is planned for 2 p.m. Sunday. There is no admission to attend a performance. A free will offering will be taken. Garden admission will be charged $5 for adults, $2 for children, 5 to 17, and free for members. With the pergola as the stage set, everything will flow in and out of that space. The audience will watch the scene changes, and there are a couple of moments when the actors speak directly to the audience, said director Anita Ross. Lighting and music will enhance the scenes. She wants to bring the play into the 21st century and give it an eclectic contemporary feel without changing the dialogue or using funky dialects. I want the actors to use their own voices. There are 19 cast members. It's a big cast and a lovely mix of people, some who have done several Shakespeare plays, some who haven't done any Shakespeare, and some who haven't ever been in a show. They're all working hard and are just amazing people to hang out with, Ross said. The Bard's Ode to Romance and Fantasy interweaves storylines about confused lovers, mechanicals, or skilled laborers who are creating a play within a play, and interfering fairies. There's the idea that we are never very far from our passions, good, bad, or indifferent, and sometimes we need to dream as a way to find out more about ourselves, Ross explained. Waterloo attorney and veteran actor Henry Edsel, cast as mechanical Peter Quince, has performed in several Shakespeare plays, including playing King Lear. This role, by contrast, is fun, he said. I like the contrast between the play within a play, which is intended to be totally crazy, and the craziness of the lovers, which is a natural thing. Shakespeare enhances that by bringing in misadventures caused by Puck and Oberon, the fairies, who are trying to impact what's happening. Lately, Shakespeare has been targeted by cancel culture, the director acknowledged. I will be the first to admit that Shakespeare isn't for everybody, but I'm not going to flag in my desire to make Shakespeare for everybody, said Ross, who performed and taught with the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. The language is so beautiful, the stories are so deep, and the emotional layers still speak volumes as to where we are in the 21st century and can help us understand more about our humanity and the human condition, she said. Edsel noted, 400 years of people presenting these shows proves they are a work of genius, and I find it incredible that this one guy could tap into human emotions in a way that still reaches people today. Other cast members include Jeffrey Hansen, Kimberly Summermeyer, Jana Garcia, John B. Nichol, Yaris Felder, Kelsey Hansen, Meg Durbin, Christopher Klein, Katie Albright, Kai Cowell, Laurie Nelson, Kevin Klingman, Melody Roche, John Nelson, Andy Cusmano, Taylor Lawrenson, Catherine Stanish, and Katie McCarty. The show was originally set for last summer at the Arboretum, but was postponed because of the COVID pandemic. Those attending are asked to bring lawn chairs or blankets for seating, as well as insect repellent and sunblock, if desired. Picnic baskets also are allowed. The next headline is Wilder announces bid for Waterloo Ward 3 seat by Amy Rivers. An entrepreneur and self-described community influencer who wants better opportunities for her ward is running for city council. Nia Wilder, 28, is owner of clothing empowerment company Lightgear, which soon will open a physical location in Crossroads Mall. She is running for the Ward 3 seat. I know there are individuals who have great ideas that can push our community and our city into the future. We can just hear them, Wilder said in an interview with The Courier last week. I want to give them the platform to be able to say how they feel and help us create that change. Pat Morrissey, who currently represents Ward 3, hasn't decided whether to run for a third four-year term. Todd Maxson also has announced his candidacy for the seat. Wilder said none of that influenced her decision. I love Pat. I love what he stands for, and I love how progressive he's made the third ward, Wilder said. I'm not running because of Pat's lack of anything. I'm running because I need more. The community needs more. Wilder, a Waterloo native and 20 under 40 winner, graduated from East High School in 2011 and earned her associate's degree in digital mass media from Hawkeye Community College. She started a photography, cinematography, and music production company, which she still runs along with Lightgear. Volunteers on community boards and mentors at the Jesse Cosby Center and Y. She's also on the boards of the North End Music and Arts Fest and the Summer Soul Classic Parade Committee. She documents local Black history as part of the Black Stories Collective, an initiative between the Grout Museum, the Black Hawk County NAACP, and Experience Waterloo. I'm the type of person where I'm always right in the middle of traffic trying to figure out what you need. How can I make it happen? How can I get you to the resources? She said. Those resources needed in her ward include social empowerment of individuals, economic empowerment like business mentoring and financial literacy, more building inspectors and code enforcement of slumlord properties, and fixing broken or missing streetlights. In the third ward, the houses just look neglected, Wilder said. You have places over here that look gorgeous, and then you literally go two blocks down, and it looks like a bomb dropped. I don't understand that. Giving everyone equal resources, she said, would bring more people out of an impoverished mindset. She believes that would reduce crime and improve the city's prospects, but particularly as it stares down the prospect of having to raise property taxes as a result of losing millions in state property tax backfill funds. I just want to see a vast growth in all of our businesses because I feel like that would bring more money into the city, especially with the amusement park, she said. And then, if we're in a situation where we might have to raise taxes, people aren't struggling, so I don't feel like those things will hurt as much. Wilder, who spoke at a council meeting in May regarding the police department's now-retired Griffin logo, is also a member of the Waterloo Police Advisory Board. She praised the council's creation of the rebranding committee and said some of the alternate logos looked awesome, but lamented both sides seemed entrenched in their opposition to one another. Some of them felt like we were trying to erase their culture or their history, she said, of removing the Griffin logo. However, there have been many instances in Black history where we have been erased, and there was only so much of a fight we could put up about it. Wilder said she doesn't want to be put on council to create a divide, but to try to understand and ultimately look at the bigger picture, like encouraging officers to step out of their cars and talk with people. Rather than it just being, I see you, I'm threatened, now we have a problem, I want it to be like, I see you. I know that kid. He's a good kid. Wait a minute. Let me talk to him and see what's going on. Wilder said. Wilder says if elected, she wants to build relationships, bring resources to underserved areas, and push Waterloo forward. Even if we have different stances on things, it doesn't mean we can't come to agreement that we all care about Waterloo. We all want to see Waterloo go forward, and we want to make sure that our people are not struggling, she said. The next story is Rates Low for Dyke New Hartford Construction Projects by Andrew Wind, Dateline, Dyke. Low interest rates will help Dyke New Hartford Community Schools save money on the repayment of sales tax revenue bonds being used to fund construction on its two campuses. The Board of Education last week approved a bid from FHN, Financial Capital Markets of Memphis, Tennessee, on nearly $8.42 million in revenue bonds. It submitted the lowest of four proposals with a net interest rate of just under 1.78%. The principal and interest will be repaid over 20 years with proceeds from the district's portion of the statewide 1% sales tax for schools. Julie Merfeld, Dyke New Hartford School's business manager, said in an email that the total amount of interest paid over the 20-year period is $1,812,803 in interest. Combined with a bond principal, that brings the total amount being repaid to just under $10.23 million. District officials said the interest rate reduces the borrowing amount needed and saves $1.8 million in interest costs compared to earlier projections. The projects are benefiting from a decline in interest rates seen around the country. 18 months ago, when we started looking at projections, interest rates were much higher than they are now, said Merfeld. We were using very conservative estimates on the advice of our financial planner. A document from June 2020 was using a 2.9% interest rate on those bonds. The board approved a $16.03 million contract in January with Peters Construction of Waterloo, including a $500,000 contingency fund. Total project costs are estimated at $17.9 million. District voters approved a $9.4 million bond issue referendum in March 2020 to be repaid with an increase in property taxes that will fund the rest of the project. A new gym and athletic amenities such as locker rooms, a weight room, and a lobby totaling 30,000 square feet are being built on the east side of the high school. Another 15,000 square feet of new space on the building's west side will contain four classrooms and administrative offices. A storm shelter safe room is part of the additions, and a new drop-off lane will be built. On the new Hartford campus, 3,000 square feet will be added for a wrestling room designed as a storm shelter safe room. The addition frees up space to be remodeled into new classrooms, while the preschool area is expanded to create a separate entrance and drop-off area. A new parking lot will also be built. Renovations in both buildings will include installation of new ceiling tiles, upgraded ventilation systems with air conditioning, and LED lighting. Secure entrances will be created at the schools as well. The work is expected to be completed in the fall of 2022. The last story from page 3, headline, Police. Waterloo man fires shot to prove pistol isn't a BB gun. By Jeff Reinitz, Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been arrested on firearms charges after firing a shot during an argument with a neighbor Sunday night. According to court records, Tianzo Earl McNabb, 42, pulled out a pistol during the dispute and pointed the gun at the neighbor. When the neighbor said he thought the weapon was a BB gun, McNabb responded by squeezing off a shot into the air and went back inside his home at 617 West Mullen Avenue. Police were called and a brief standoff followed until McNabb was detained and arrested for felon in possession of a firearm, assault while displaying a weapon, and reckless use of a firearm. Officers seized a 9mm SCCY handgun from his home and recovered a spent shell casing, according to court records. Court records allege McNabb is prohibited from handling firearms because of a 2007 drug conviction in Cook County, Illinois. Turning to Metro Briefs, outdoor warning system tested. Dateline Waverly. The outdoor warning systems throughout Bremer County will be tested beginning at 11 a.m. August 3rd. Tests are performed to assure that the systems are functioning properly. When a siren sounds on a day other than a test, residents are advised to tune to local broadcast media as soon as possible. Outdoor warning systems are to warn those residents who are outside of their homes. NOAA, all hazard radios, are encouraged for inside the home. For additional information, contact the Bremer County Emergency Management Agency at 319-352-0133. North Star Golf Fundraiser Set, Dateline Waterloo. North Star Community Services will host its 25th annual golf outing fundraiser starting at 1 p.m. Friday at Gates Park Golf Course, Waterloo. This event supports persons with disabilities served by North Star. Registration begins at noon with dinner following the game. The format is a four-person best shot, and you can register as a team or individual. The $125 registration fee includes golf, cart, barbecue dinner, drink tickets, and prizes. All proceeds will benefit the men and women with disabilities who are served by North Star. Funds raised through the generosity of our community will allow opportunities for people with disabilities that couldn't be provided through regular funding. There will be a 50-50 raffle, and mulligans will be available for purchase. Waverly Pool closed Sunday. Dateline Waverly. Due to a staff shortage, Waverly Municipal Swimming Pool will be closed Sunday. It will resume normal operation times on Monday. Water main to be flushed, Waterloo. Waterloo Waterworks flush mains will flush water mains in the area from Sager Avenue to Four Seasons Drive between Hackett Road and the West City Limits Thursday. Customers living in the area and within several blocks of the flushing area could experience some discoloration. The water may be a brownish color during and immediately after the flushing. Residents are urged not to plan a wash day that day. The discolored water is bacterially safe. Artists sought to design T-shirt. Dateline Waterloo. The Blackhawk County Democrats Central Committee members are seeking artists to design a new artwork design that will be placed on their T-shirts. The artists chosen will be awarded $100 and have their name displayed with their design on the shirts. For more information on the parameters of the design, email ambrosia3424@aol.com. Interested artists can present their design in person at 1 p.m. August 15th at 307 East 4th Street. Impact Church offers free meal, Waterloo. A free community banquet will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday at Impact Church, 715 East 4th Street. This banquet will be focused on those in our community who are struggling with addiction or in recovery. They are offering a free catered meal, raffle prizes, live music, connection to community resources, and motivational speakers. If you have any questions, please call 916-271-3704. Wartburg launches degree program. Dateline Waverly. A total of 18 students and professionals from as far away as Oak Park, California, rounded out the inaugural class in Wartburg College's new Master of Arts in Leadership degree program. The online degree program is designed for working professionals and provides a deep foundation of problem-based learning about leadership from different perspectives. It builds on the college's long-standing commitment to leadership education, which includes the Irving R. Berling Distinguished Professorship in Leadership and the college's Institute for Leadership Education. Members of the cohort come from many different work sectors, including business, K-12 and higher education, agriculture, the military, public administration, and faith communities. All participants will be mentored and will receive a high level of faculty support as they progress through the program. Graduates will have the opportunity to enhance their leadership portfolios, implement or further implement a project with their business, organization, or community, and demonstrate learning through a written product that integrates knowledge of the course. The two-year program includes two brief online intensive experiences at the start and end of the first year. The Master of Arts can be applied to any field and is designed to help individuals explore how they are called to lead and navigate personal leadership challenges. For more information, go to www.wartburg.edu/leadership-masters. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, July 27th. 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Patricia Jane Weber Barrage, July 14, 1949 to July 23, 2021. The family of Patricia Jane Weber Barrage, a loving mother and devoted wife, is deeply saddened to share that Pat peacefully passed into glory with our Lord Jesus Christ, surrounded by her family on Friday, July 23, 2021, from complications related to COVID-19. Visitation will be on Wednesday, July 28th from 4 to 7 p.m. at McLaren's Rest Haven Chapel, and Mass of Christian Burial on Thursday, July 29th at 10:30 a.m. at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Des Moines. A private family interment service will be held at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery in Van Meter at a later date. Condolences can be sent to Allen at 4043 4th Street, Des Moines, Iowa, 50310. Seth Sanderson, October 3rd, 1980 to July 23rd, 2021, Denver. Seth Sanderson, 40, of Denver, died on Friday, July 23rd, 2021 as the result of an auto accident. Memorials to the family may be addressed to, funeral services are 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, July 29th, 2021. At Kern's Funeral Service. Visitation from 3 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, July 28, 2021 at Kern's. Burial, Garden of Memories. Martha Anderson, Cedar Falls. Martha Anderson, age 89, of Cedar Falls, died Sunday, December 12, 2020 at Pinnacle Specialty Care in Cedar Falls. Memorial services will be at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, July 31, 2021 at First United Methodist Church in Cedar Falls. Burial will be in Indiana Chapel Cemetery in rural Attica, Iowa, at a later date. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service of the church. Online guest book at richardsonfuneralservice.com. Memorials may be directed to the family. Roland D. Braze, Waverly. Roland D. Braze, 83, of Waverly, died Saturday, July 24, 2021, at his residence. According to his wishes, no formal services are planned at this time. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is assisting the family. Layla D. Petit, June 27, 1955, through July 22, 2021, Waterloo. Leela D. Petit, 66 years old, of Waterloo, Iowa, died suddenly Thursday, July 22, 2021, in Grand Lake, Colorado, while visiting relatives. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 28, 2021, at the First Baptist Church, Dunkerton, Iowa, with burial at Fairview Cemetery, Dunkerton. Visitation will be Tuesday, July 27, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the White Funeral Home, Jessup, Iowa, and for an hour before services Wednesday at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be posted at white-mounthope.com. Alfred M. Al Jansen, February 19, 1931 to July 24, 2021, Waverly. Alfred M. Al Jansen, age 90, of Waverly, died Saturday, July 24, 2021, at his home. Visitation will be held on Thursday, July 29th at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Church in Waverly from 10 to 11 a.m. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, July 29th at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Church with Pastor John Ellingworth officiating. Burial will follow at Harlington Cemetery in Waverly, with the Waverly Area Veterans Post giving honors. Memorials may be directed to either St. John Lutheran Church or Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences may be left at kaisercorson.com, 319-352-1187. Linda Michelle Caldwell, April 22, 1955 to July 16, 2021. Linda Michelle Caldwell was born April 22, 1955, to Floyda D. Williams and Morris Overstreet in Dallas, Texas. She died July 16, 2021. Services were held 11 a.m. Monday, July 26, at Antioch Baptist Church. Additional services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 31, at Second Mission Baptist Church, Corsica, Texas, with burial in Steen Cemetery, Malakoff, Texas. Sanders' funeral service is assisting the family. William Allen McNulty, April 6, 1941 to July 23, 2021. Williamsburg. William Allen McNulty was born April 6, 1941 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. A funeral mass will be at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, July 29, 2021 at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Williamsburg. Burial will be at St. Mary's Catholic Church Cemetery. Visitation will be on Wednesday from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg. There will be a prayer service followed by a Knights of Columbus Rosary at 4 p.m. A memorial fund has been established for REA, or the Iowa County Food Bank. Messages and tributes may be directed to PowellFuneralHomes.com. Turning to the sports page and state baseball, the headline is "Go Hawks, Ready to Rumble" by Craig Sesker. Dateline, Waverly. They're not a team filled with superstar players or big-time college recruits, but line up to face the Waverly Shell Rock Go Hawks on the baseball diamond, and you better be prepared for a gritty, intense, hard-fought battle. Just ask Webster City. The Lynx entered the Class 3A sub-state finals with just one loss and were the favorites while playing at home. But they were unable to put away the pesky Go Hawks as the visitors scratched and clawed before eventually earning a 9-3 triumph in 9 innings. Waverly Shell Rock qualified for state for the 6th time. The Go Hawks are making their 4th state trip since 2014. They won the Class 3A championship in 2015. "We have great competitors who have really improved this season," Coach Casey Klunder said. "I'm just really proud of how this group has progressed. Our kids are playing well, and we're looking forward to continue that at the state tournament." The Go Hawks now turn their focus to their state quarterfinal game. 5th-seeded WSR will face number 4-seed Central DeWitt at 10 a.m. Wednesday at the University of Iowa's Duane Banks Field. DeWitt is making its 4th state appearance. The Sabres were the Class 3A state runner-up in 2019. "DeWitt is historically one of the top programs in 3A," Klunder said. "They have good top-end pitching, and they knocked off a good Davenport Assumption team, so we know they're very good." Waverly Shell Rock has an excellent pitching staff. Junior Chance Key is expected to take the ball as the starter on Wednesday. He is 6-2 with a 3.14 ERA. He has struck out 92 batters in 58 innings. Key also is a force at the plate, batting 405 with 6 home runs and 53 RBIs. Junior Carson Graven, also has delivered as a starter. He is 7-1 with a 2.84 earned run average while striking out 61 in 49-plus innings. Graven is batting 320 with 23 RBIs. And the Go Hawks feature an outstanding closer in senior Ben Buseman, who set the state record with 11 saves this summer. He has 34 strikeouts in 27 innings. He is hitting .324 and has knocked in 25 runs. "Our pitching is really strong," Klunder said. "We will probably need three starting pitchers with the way the schedule is set up. We have good depth, and we feel good about our chances." WSR relies on an abundance of players offensively. Senior Andy Rose is hitting .363 with 26 RBIs and 28 steals. Junior Corbin Dewey is batting .352 and has driven in 32 runs. Senior catcher Luke Shover and sophomore Dylan Stockdale have contributed 20 RBIs apiece. Klunder said Shover has been superb defensively behind the plate. Junior Ethan Hennings is batting .326 and has stolen a team-leading 30 bases. Waverly Shellrock is batting an impressive 309 as a team while stealing 185 total bases. Clunder said his team's formula for success is fairly straightforward. "We need everyone in our lineup to contribute offensively. I mean, 1 through 9, he said. "We need to make solid plays defensively, and we obviously need our starters and relievers to pitch well. I love our team's energy, and I love the way we are playing." Even though it has won 33 games, WSR spent most of the season outside the state rankings, and that's just fine with the Gohawks. "Our guys have really embraced the underdog role," Clunder said. "Every single guy plays an important role on this team. It's not one or two players. It seems like somebody different comes up big every night." Waverly Shellrock starts 4 seniors. "Those guys have given us great leadership," Clunder said. "They have been a big key to our success." Clunder is a huge fan of the team he will send onto the field this week. Watching the dog pile and the celebration after we qualified for state, it was so rewarding to see all of their hard work pay off, Clunder said. "The excitement they had and the love they have for each other is pretty special. This group's chemistry is unbelievable. They mesh together really well." More state baseball. Top-seeded Remsen St. Mary's flies past Grundy Center in 1A state baseball opener. Dateline Carroll. Blaine Harpenau struck out 9, and his Remsen St. Mary's team hammered out 17 hits as the Hawks downed Grundy Center 14-0 Monday in a Class 1A state baseball opener at Merchants Park in Carroll. St. Mary's, top-seeded, never allowed the Spartans room to breathe. After walking Grundy Center's leadoff hitter, Dane Zakula, to start the game, Harpenau retired the next 14 batters he faced before being lifted with 2 outs in the top of the 5th. Harpenau's final line was 42-3 innings pitched with no hits, a walk, and 9 strikeouts. He won his 13th game of the season as the Hawks improved to 27-3. Grundy Center did not collect a hit until Bryce Greiner hit a 2-out double in the 5th off reliever Isaiah Garrett's. Remsen scored 3 times in the first inning as it produced 5 consecutive hits off Grundy Center starter Braden Sawyer, who retired the first batter he faced. Offensively, Remsen was paced by Cale Ortman, who drove in 5, including 4 in the 4th, when he collected a 2-run single and a 2-run double. Remsen St. Mary's will play the winner of New London, Key of Lansing, quarterfinal Wednesday in the semifinals. Grundy Center, which was making its 5th state tournament appearance and first since 1993, will return all 9 of its starters, as the Spartans had no seniors on its team. The Spartans also qualified in 1975 and 1976, finishing second in 1975. UNI hires Garrett Fernell as new assistant softball coach. Dateline Cedar Falls. Northern Iowa head softball coach Ryan Jacobs has announced the hiring of Garrett Fernell as the team's new assistant coach. Fernell joins Jacobs and pitching coach Monica Wright on the Panther staff that earned 2021 Missouri Valley Conference Coaching Staff of the Year honors. "We couldn't be happier to add Garrett to our staff," Jacobs said. "He is a perfect addition and brings great knowledge and experience." Fernell will serve as the outfield and hitting coach after the departure of J.J. Reimer following the 2019 season. He has previously served as an assistant coach at Ohio University, University of North Carolina Wilmington, Presbyterian College, and the University of Louisiana at Monroe. Fernell will oversee day-to-day operations while leading recruiting efforts. Fernell was a 2010 graduate of Marshalltown Community College and earned his bachelor's degree from Iowa State in 2013. In prep athletics, Metro baseball, softball players earned all Mississippi Valley nods. Several Metro baseball and softball players were honored by the Mississippi Valley Conference last week. In baseball, Cedar Falls junior Ben Phillips and senior outfielder Connor Woods each were named to the first team in the Mississippi Division. Phillips, a first baseman pitcher, hit 403 with a 522 on-base percentage while scoring a team-best 46 runs and driving in 26 runs. Woods batted 377 with a 507 OBP, and he drove in a team-high 33 runs while also walking 28 times. Senior Zach Neese and junior Caleb Raisty were named to the second team. In the Valley Division, Waterloo West's Mitch Fordyce and Colby Adams were first-team picks. Fordyce, the Wahawks' shortstop, hit 453 with a 526 OBP. He drove in 37 runs while hitting 7 home runs, 10 doubles, and 4 triples. He also scored a team-best 39 times. Adams batted 400 from his leadoff post, and he scored 33 times while adding 16 stolen bases. West senior second baseman Sam Moore was named to the second team. In softball, Cedar Falls had 4 players honored in the Mississippi Division. Senior Ronnie Steffener was named to the first team after hitting 421. She drove in 38 runs while stocking 5 home runs, 13 doubles, and 3 triples. Junior Maya Brinker, junior Maddie McFarland, and senior Lex Hesse were named to the second team. In the Valley Division, Waterloo East senior Sidney Magnuson and Jaden Bentley, as well as Waterloo West senior Bree McPoland, were named to the first team. Magnuson hit 336 with 11 home runs and 34 RBIs. She also won 5 games in the pitching circle. Bentley hit 425 while scoring 30 runs, tops for East. McPoland battled 436 with a 569 OBP. She scored 34 runs, tops on the team, and had 11 doubles. Turning to the commentary page and letters to the editor. This one is titled Backing Briar, and it is by John Carney from Waterloo. Considering the June 15th statement on the website of the progressive group, Demand Justice, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer should immediately announce his intent to retire from the bench, with future control of the closely divided Senate uncertain. President Biden must have the opportunity to nominate a successor without delay and fulfill his pledge to put the first black woman on the Supreme Court. For the good of the country, now is the time to step aside. Unquote. More than a dozen progressive organizations have endorsed this statement. At 82, Breyer evidently no longer serves the political ends of the far left-wing Democrats. They worry that if Republicans take control of the Senate, the court will move further to the right. It is noteworthy that Demand Justice is not alleging Brewer is incompetent or in failing health or unable to perform his duties. It is his age, but Joe Biden is 78, Nancy Pelosi is 81. Anyone calling for their resignations? The plea for Breyer to step down is transparently and shamefully political. It smacks of ageism. To his credit, Justice Breyer has resisted the pressure to resign. Good for him. His allegiance is to the Constitution, not progressive interest groups. And that is by John Carney, Waterloo. The next one is called Save Schuetz by Lewis Starkey, Waterloo. Schuetz Hospital has been a landmark in Waterloo for many years. It was given to Waterloo in memory of Otto Schuetz's wife, Charlotte, and could still be a landmark if it was restored instead of demolished. What a great location for senior housing. There is ample parking. It is close to restaurants, pharmacies, churches, and a hospital. The building has elevators, the rooms are good sizes, and there is required plumbing and electrical in each room. Parts of the building have already been redecorated. The main floor would be excellent to house a small indoor mall. It has lots of windows for displays. A coffee shop or bistro could serve shoppers. The first floor already has public restrooms. There are many reasons to keep this landmark rather than to tear it down. Why tear down a landmark that could be an asset for the city? There are several properties in Waterloo that should be demolished, just not this one. And that is from Lewis Starkey of Waterloo. And the last one is Food for Thought by David Smith. I have noticed some meaningful quotes that have recently been posted. Here are some of them. Quote, I say we create an exchange program to let people who hate socialism out of Cuba in exchange for Americans that want it, unquote. And another, quote, blaming 100-plus-year-old statues of men who died 150 years ago for our problems today only highlights the ignorance among us, unquote. And what scares me most is not the fact that our media is lying to us, it's the fact that most of us believe them. We often hear, life is short, better enjoy it. How about, eternity is long, better prepare for it. And last, the greatest mistake you can make is to die without Jesus. And that is by Dave Smith of Waterloo. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.